You know, it's easier to throw rocks at a house than it is to build one. In today's world of constant social media bombardment, there are a lot of rock throwers and very few house builders. But what inspires me is that every time I start to despair of there being anything good in this world, someone comes along with a story that's truly inspiring. And that's what you're going to get on today's podcast. My guest today grew from a solo practitioner to one of the biggest practices in his specialty and is now inspiring hundreds of thousands of physicians and patients through his content on medicine, business, and leadership. It is an amazing conversation, and I'm excited for you to be a part of it. Let's kick it. It's not so good right now.
Welcome to the Scope of Practice podcast, where we help busy healthcare professionals learn to manage their businesses successfully and master their personal finances. Now, here's your host, Dr. Brent Lacey.
Hey, y'all. Thanks so much for joining me for the Scope of Practice podcast, where you can get the knowledge and resources you need to grow your leadership skills, your business, and your personal finances. Welcome to episode 79. If you haven't already subscribed to the podcast, please be sure to go ahead and hit that subscribe button right now. And also, hit the button at the top of the podcast player to turn on the automatic downloads. And that way you can listen to these episodes anytime, anywhere, even if you're in a place like my office that has just wretched cell phone service. Oh, man, it's just the worst. Well, listen, if you've been listening to the podcast the last couple of weeks, you've heard that I am going to be hosting a free online summit on November 15th through 17th this year called Marriage and Money MD. You know, medical careers drain time and energy from physicians and their spouses, not to mention the crushing debt that most doctors are faced with when they're first coming out of training. Well, the Marriage and Money MD Summit is a free 3-day online event that will give physician families the tools, resources, and encouragement they need to strengthen their marriage and build wealth so they can have the happy family and financial independence they deserve. Just go to marriageandmoneymd.com to sign up. It's totally free to sign up, so sign up today. And even if you can't attend live, sign up anyway, and you'll get access to the replays of the talks for the rest of the week. And if you want to get access to the 10-plus hours of bonus content from our speakers, plus MP3 files of the talks that you can listen to on your phone, plus exclusive access to join the live Q&A sessions at the end of each night with our speakers, you can also upgrade to an all-access VIP pass for just $99. Ticket prices go up to $149 after the conference starts, so upgrade today and take advantage of those savings. But again, the summit itself is free to attend, so sign up today at www.marriageandmoneymd.com. Before we get into the show, let's talk about this week's sponsor, Empath IQ. 85% of patients read about their physicians online before they come in for an appointment. Many of them will choose their physician based on how good the physician reviews are. If you're not getting great reviews, you'll fall behind your competition and it'll hurt your business. But who has the time to do that? Well, that's why physicians and dentists partner with Empath IQ to streamline the online review process. Their services make it easier and more affordable than ever to generate 5-star reviews from satisfied patients. Instantly increase online reviews and stay on top of feedback through Empath IQ's simple-to-use customer portal. Go to www.thescopeofpractice.com/empathIQ. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/empathIQ. Or call 858-375-5686. That's 858-375-5686. Mention the Scope of Practice podcast to receive 2 months for free. My guest today is Dr. Chang Ron. Dr. Ron is an internal medicine and lifestyle medicine specialist, and he's the founder for the Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine. He went from a solo practice to one of the biggest lifestyle medicine multi-practice specialty centers anywhere. He's also amassed, get this, over 600,000 followers on social media. And no, that is not a typo. It is over 600,000. And they follow his advice on medical management of common syndromes and business and leadership. And it's just amazing. He has taken his practice to incredible levels. And the most amazing thing, to me at least, is that he did it all organically, bit by bit. And he learned it all along the way. I mean, he's not that much different from you or I. But he's going to talk to us today about entrepreneurship, business leadership, and how we are going to save our healthcare system. He's also hosting a free online summit in October that you can attend if you sign up at www.thescopeofpractice.com/AI summit or click the link in the podcast description. This conversation is going to inspire you. At least I hope it will, because it sure inspired me. So here is my conversation with Dr. Chang Ron. Hey, y'all. I am super excited to welcome my guest today to the Scope of Practice podcast. This is the founder of the Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine, Dr. Chang Ron. Dr. Ron, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot for having me. How are you doing?
Well, I am great, my friend. I am super excited to have you on here. So I think it's likely that a lot of our listeners don't actually know who you are, which the more that I have talked to you, the more I hear about all the things you've done and are doing, the more I think that there's no reason people shouldn't have heard of you. But what we're going to talk about today is you know, having a growth mindset, you know, learning from your mistakes, you know, growing and building off of past failures into future successes, becoming a thought leader, becoming an influencer, you know. But you know, one of my favorite proverbs is, and that really has stuck with me as I started the Scope of Practice, is do not despise humble beginnings. And so, you know, I mean, you think about it, Apple started in a garage, right? And now it's this, yeah, you know, huge conglomerate company. So, I'm very excited for this today, but maybe you could kind of tell us a little bit about your background so people can get to know you. So what led you to go from, you know, your friendly neighborhood physician to now business owner, thought leader, influencer, you know, someone who's having meetings with the head of the CDC, you know, things like that.
By keeping to be a friendly neighborhood physician, I think. I'll tell you what, it's been an interesting journey. And it really started with me questioning myself because I felt so much burnout at the time, finishing residency. I trained in New York Presbyterian in Queens, New York. And, after I finished residency, I had this sort of moment where I was kind of in limbo about what I really should do. Ended up in private practice, and which was fabulous. I mean, private practice was great because it allowed me to see a lot of different things. I became partner my second year, which allowed me to see even more things, but I got to really understand humans. I got to understand that me being that friendly neighborhood doctor, and all of a sudden, you know, by the way, it took 2 years before my panel was complete full. I had to stop taking new patients in 2 years. And it was crazy. And part of it because I had a senior partner for the practice, and that practice has been there for a very long time. But the other part, because I was attracting a crowd I didn't expect to attract. And it's the people who wanted to get off of medicines. And being an internal medicine doc, you know, I think that I spend a lot of effort talking about it. And it really allowed me to really have understanding of just what human connection is. So I started valuing human connection and realized that was sort of my goal to get out of the burnout phase. And then started asking patients. So about half a year, about 6 months into private practice, this is my aha moment, is instead of assuming why the patients are there based on what my medical system puts in the chief complaint, I tell them, well, you know, your chief complaint is that you have a cold, but I'm curious, like, what are your goals in coming here? And what do you see yourself by the end of the year? And every patient just takes back, like, huh, no one's ever asked me that. And to this day, they still are taken back by that. But what it does is it triggers a different level of communication. Because if I were to write them steroids or Z-Pak or something to a script, then the value I gave them was in the power of that prescription. But then I challenge them to have a thought. Yes, I'm probably still going to give you a script, but you know, what are your goals? And honestly, it didn't really take that. I didn't spend a bazillion hours with my patients. When I first started, I had 10-minute slots for my patients, and I was doing this during the slots. But it challenged them to come back the next time and talk about the things that they want to accomplish. And by the end of a year and a half, majority of the people were making appointments with me just to talk. And I was like the coach all of a sudden, right? And I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. And I really enjoyed it. And it's not something my other partners really kind of experienced. And you know, at that time, I was doing inpatient, outpatient, hospice, sports medicine. I kind of did it all. And I was started being kind of burnt out. I enjoy my conversation with my patients, but I started being really burnt out and not understanding why I was really burnt out, because I thought I was serving, right? I really wanted to serve. And so so my aha moment was that, yes, I like relationships and I like that patients are coming to me for it. But I also like that there's something called Google reviews at the time, which I ended up having the most number of 5-star reviews for that city, and got voted the biggest rising star physician in the following year, top doctor within that city. And so, and it really gave me a purpose of an understanding of what people actually value. It's not in the power of a prescription, but it's in the power of a conversation, right? And so that was my big aha moment I think I had. And I was like, you know what? All of medicine really should be like this, because not only did I have good conversations, I had great outcomes for patients. I started tracking my A1C data for diabetics, my hypertensive, and I became a data miner, data nerd. Like, the more data, the better for my patients. And I presented to the ACO, and that ended up going to hospital administration. And then I decided to write a book about my data. It's called The Ultimate Guide for Type 2 Diabetes Reversal. It's on Amazon if you guys want to look it up. So I became an author my second year into practice, and co-wrote it with one of my really good friends. Her name is Mimi Chan. She's a registered dietitian. And then when that book came out, it really challenged the way that I looked at medicine. Other people looked at me. And then I'm like, what now? What do I do now, right? And so from there, it exploded into me wanting to replicate myself in different formats. And that's when the entrepreneurial bug kind of bit after the book was written. And I developed online courses and did a lot of digital marketing, started my own digital marketing company on the side at the time, and then learned a lot from there. And then ultimately grew a really big social media following, and then decided to open Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine as sort of a prototype of what I think the perfect practice should be.
I love that you kind of glossed over that. You said a very big social media following. I know the answer to this, but tell the listeners what the size of that social media following is.
Yeah. So I started talking about diabetes and all this stuff, did a bunch of Facebook Lives, which just became available to regular consumers other than celebrities at the time, and developed just over 500,000 followers at that time. I think I'm just under 600,000 right now on Facebook. And then Facebook was the only thing I grew, and I started developing other platforms since then. That number just kind of exploded out of nowhere. And I realized a lot of it was just providing value, man, just providing value to the interwebs.
So, I mean, that is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, anybody who can figure out a way to get 600,000 people to sit up and pay attention has really tapped into something. And what I've heard you say for the last 10 minutes here is that this is, you're sticking with the fundamentals. It's individual interaction. It's human connection. It's how can I provide value? It's changing the conversation to what the patient needs, not necessarily what the patient is asking for. And that seems like such a very basic, very simple concept, but you've been able to leverage that into a phenomenal movement.
You know, the concept is simple, but we're kind of taught to do the opposite, man, in medical training, to be honest. You know, I think going through residency and med school, learned a lot of pharmacology, learned a lot about what to do for patients on the medical side. Does this patient need surgery? Here are the guidelines. Here's American Heart Association, you know, American Cancer Society and whatnot, right? And so our life became dominated by guidelines, but there's not necessarily a set of guidelines until I came across American College of Lifestyle Medicine, ACLM, to really talk about like the human interaction. And then I came across this brilliant guy by the name of Don Miller. I think you know who he is. And I kind of read this book that kind of changed my perception about human interaction. Is you can either choose to be a hero for people, or you can choose to be a guide. And for me, I will be a guide all day long. And what a guide does is very different than what a hero does. You know, what a hero does, and I think we were taught to be heroes. There's nothing wrong with heroes, but heroes get really burnt out. But what a hero does is that a hero delivers value to a person, but that hero can suffer a tragedy when the needs are unmet. And but what a guy does is like Yoda, right? Like Yoda's not going to disappoint anyone. I mean, the dude, like the Yoda could do anything, but because Yoda was a guide, and that guide will empowers people. It become a language of empowerment. If I were to write someone a Z pack or a Medrol dose pack or something like that, there's no empowerment there. That's a hero's mentality. I'm going to give you, here is a dragon called, you know, COVID or flu, whatever. And I'm going to slay it with this antibiotic or this prescription, versus a guy is like, hey, what are your goals for this year? I just want to know. And here's my thoughts on it, you know, from a guide perspective. So I get to play a hero and a guide at the same time. But what ended up happening, what kept people coming back, was the guide philosophy. So I started putting that into an online course to teach nurse practitioners and physician assistants, and started accepting these students into our practice. And I started teaching them this. And then they took that to other rotations. And then they came back ultimately to do elective. And like, well, this is what I experienced. I mean, there's so much joy in medicine when you speak like a guide, that it just is a completely different philosophy. But your outcomes are fabulous, because now you have a partner to work with your patients, rather than, you know, here's what I say, do it. If you don't do it, see another physician, which I don't think is the right way to practice medicine.
Well, and I'm really excited to be talking through all this stuff. This is just so key. And I think as physicians, you're right, we tend to focus on the hero's aspect of the journey. We see ourselves as the hero in the story. But, you know, I think I hadn't really considered it in that framework until just now as you're talking. But when I'm talking to patients, this is very, very much the same way that I approach it. I call myself a teacher. You know, teaching is my spiritual gift. And so for me, I feel like whenever I go into a patient's room, my goal is to teach and to educate and to coach. So, because just like you said, it's very easy to go in and say, okay, Mrs. Jones, you have acid reflux. We're going to put you on Prilosec at this dose, and come see me in 3 months and we'll see how you're doing. That's easy. And a lot of people do that and are successful at treating the reflux. But what I have found in my experience is the thing that separates good physicians from great physicians is the degree to which you get people to understand what's going on in a way that helps them modify their behavior and achieve a more global level of success. Mm-hmm. And I see it as part of my goal, or as part of my duty, really, to engender that sense of change in that person. And that really starts for me from the educating. And so that guide mentality, I think, is huge. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, adopting that guide mentality, I really wanted to do something with it, more of a federal level. I started approaching legislatures. I started approaching politicians, medical societies, with this concept. Honestly, no one really cared, until I put the numbers to it, right? I was like, hey, okay, here's what our actual numbers are for our practice, and how we've been able to keep people out of the hospital and stuff like that. I mean, we even got numbers through COVID-19, right? And so I was a data miner at the same time, trying to make some changes. And ultimately, one thing led to another. The people who really jive with me are other physicians who have been in my shoes and who's been really burnt out as well. And then we all of a sudden, like you said, we started seeing ourselves as teachers. I mean, the word doctor actually is Latin for teacher. So, you know, Dr. Ron, teacher Ron, right? And so if we see ourselves as teachers, I started creating a classroom. So one of the things that I went on this 1 week journey by myself in California, and I meditated the whole time. And when I came back, what I realized is that, you know, I don't have a medical practice. I have a university, and within universities, you need teachers and you have students, right? And so, and then I started looking into what American Academy of Family Practice called DIGMAS, which is drop-in group visits. That was defined back in the 90s and no one used. And I started doing group visits, and I started seeing that, oh my gosh, people actually wanted to become a classroom group visit. And we actually billed patients insurance for it and got paid for it. And it was actually a scalable business model. But not only that, there were people coming to us only to be in the group visits. They don't even care about the one-on-ones, right? They're like, I want to be in a group of diabetics. autoimmune patients, dementia, right? So all of a sudden, different pockets of community start being formed within these groups. One of my friends, James Maskell, brilliant guy, he wrote two books, but one of them is called The Community Cure. We're actually featured in chapter 7 and chapter 11, talking about how we actually approach the community. And then when I started realizing that other institutions were starting to adopt this, UCSD started doing it. And then I reached out to them, like, holy crap, we're doing the same things. Cleveland Clinic started doing it, and they had a massive program. Maimonides Hospital had over, 100,000 patients within the group setting and medical settings with health coaches, providers, and stuff like that. And I'm like, hold on a second. I'm not really a large institution. I don't have a desire to be a large institution. But what I know is that they have data supporting this. And the reason they're able to allow the continuation of these programs is they have grants and stuff from the government. I don't have that, right? And so when I started Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine, it was that experimentation that really led me to really understand what does a modern practice, what should it really look like? And I wanted to be uncompromising of what it should look like and design business plans sort of around it. Suffered a tons of pain points. You know, we opened 6 weeks before Hurricane Harvey. That was a terrible idea, but learned from
it. That's horrible timing.
Yeah, my own house got flooded. That was not good timing. And then suffered multiple different things and had issues with United Healthcare contracts and Blue Cross Blue Shield contracts. Our ACOs had these wars with them and all the stuff like that. Insurance reimbursements, you know, and then vendorships and stuff like that. So learned a lot through the private practice that there's so many pain points within it. But the number one goal was uncompromising, is how do you communicate with patients and what can we do? How do you develop business plan around communicating with patients? And that's the birth and the continuation of Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine. And in fact, you know, this is our fourth year in existence, and I think we've done pretty well.
And it's so key what you just said, that no matter how big you get, no matter how many people you acquire, no matter how many social media followers start joining you, it's keeping to the same original mission. And I just think that's so crucial. I want people to hear that. It's not that things evolve and morph over time. It's that the way that you apply those fundamental principles is what will change. But that core, that fundamental set of values, that core mission, that's the thing that can't ever change. So that's really crucial. I love that. Well, so let's kind of pivot a little bit then. So, because you alluded to a few tough times with Hurricane Harvey and some insurance challenges and things like that. I mean, you've had tremendous success. You've had a lot of accomplishments, and I'm sure a lot of accolades. But you know, anytime there's a large success like that, what I usually see is there's a large pile of mistakes and failures that is built on. I know that's certainly been the case for me. So can you talk a little bit about that for some of our younger docs that are hearing this going, well, how am I ever going to get to that? I'm just sitting here, this little low level or whatever. So encourage us. What are some of the low points, or some of the failures, some of the mistakes, some of the challenges that you've had to overcome in your career to get to where you are now?
You know, my personality, I'm a very optimistic person, and sometimes optimism kills, right? And so, you know, I started hard in developing Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine, you know, with 6 providers just to start off with. And that's a lot of overhead when all of a sudden you have a hurricane that wiped out half of Houston or 3/4 of Houston, you know, and all of a sudden we're having payroll issues and stuff like that. So, you know, I wasn't great at finances. I understood it, but I wasn't really great. And I didn't know how to do a lot of these things. So, you know, I come from China. I'm an immigrant. And with the immigrant philosophy is that you just do it and see what happens, and you fail, but you want to be able to make fail forward, right? And so I'm very proud to say that I failed every single day. I actually failed today because I got delayed on one of our tax items. And so you learn from it, right? And so people should really look forward to failure so that you can pick up what you learned and continue to keep going. And I think that the more number of failures you collect in the lifetime, the more you learn from them, keep going. But the only way you can do this, if you have your eyes on the prize, you're uncompromising about it. Have there been times I've wavered off and not understanding what my identity, what the practice identity is, chasing after money or contracts. You bet 100% I have. Was it worth it? Never. It was never worth it to go veer off with your eyes on another prize because it was too distracting. And guess what? Everyone suffered. I suffered. My staff suffered. My provider suffered. My family suffered. Okay. And so, but that's human and that's normal. But guess what? The same staff that's been with me through those tough times are the exact same staff I have right now. We're such a close-knit family and we love hanging out with each other even after work. And so that includes everyone from my front desk to my office manager to my director of operations to my CFO. I mean, we all, it's just a close-knit family. And that culture reverberates between the language of my staff to the patients. So you just Google Texas Center for Lifestyle Medicine. Look at our online reviews. Look what people are really saying. You see every five-star review that you see, and we don't have all five-star reviews, trust me, we have a lot of one-stars, but with all every five-star reviews that you see is saying that finally you have a practice that actually listens from the doctors, the practitioners, the health coaches, the front desk, and whatever, right? And sure, there's going to be some not-so-great reviews on administrative stuff, but we take that and we make those one-star review people into our partners. It's like, hey, I like you. You give us a one-star review. This is freaking awesome. You know, let's work through what actually happened. And then once we work through it, I'll change that to five stars. I was like, no, I actually don't want you to change it five stars. Just leave it as one star. That's totally okay. And we're going to work through it on our side. And that's the culture that we really have. And respect. Most practices and believe that your patients come first and your staff comes second. And I think it's quite the opposite. Your staff is your family. They come first. And so they're your voices, right? And so you understand who you're around with all the time are the ones who are going to be your voices. What are they actually saying? What is the feedback? And you want as much interaction with them as possible or develop a system where they can freely talk. And that's why once a month we have, I call it grand rounds, but really we just kind of get together and talk through pain points that we have. And we always solve things, you know? And I think those are really important things is keep your eyes on the prize. Yes, we're going to veer off, dude. I mean, we all do. And young docs out there, you're going to veer off. You're probably veering off right now. But that's okay. But as long as you keep your eyes on what truly matters to you and who do you really want to serve, not that, hey, I want to serve everyone. That's not how it works. Who's the avatar? Who's that person that you want to serve and continue driving down that path? For me, I want to serve my 68-year-old Medicare grandma who's stressed out because she still has to work because of different issues. And then she has these chronic health issues, but she doesn't want to be on medicines. That's my avatar right there, right? You may have a different one, but if you stick to that and you don't veer off, you should be good.
I love what you said that you need to look forward to failure. I hope people didn't miss that because that I think is really an important statement. And really an important mindset to have, look forward to failure. And I think as physicians, we're trained for the opposite, fear failure, punish failure, mock failure. And so it leads to people covering up mistakes. It leads to people playing it safe and being overly cautious and not taking care of patients when they think it's going to be hard or it might be a bad outcome or something. And so it really puts training wheels on people in a way that I think is limiting. But it takes a pretty forward-thinking mentality to have that paradigm shift, especially early on. And it sounds like you really had that. So do you think that that is an important thing for the younger docs, for trainees, for folks who are early in their career to have that broader scope of vision beyond just the next patient, the next day, the next fiscal quarter, to really have that broader scope of vision of what do I want my career? What do I want my practice to look like in 3 years and 5 years and 10 years? Is that important for us to have early on?
Yes and no, actually. I think it's important to have earlier on, but also you have to check yourself because it may be what you want in 2021. It may not be what you want in 2022 and you have to recognize it, you know? And I see this all the time. You know, I think you and I are both part of SoMe Docs, which is social media doctors. There's a lot of social media doctors kind of see out there, kind of young doctors who have an identity and they kind of shift and change. And a lot of what they said the year before comes back to bite them, right? And I feel like there's nothing wrong with doing that, right? But understand that you always have to have some margin to say to yourself, hey, this is the road that I've been going down. But am I running enthusiastically down the wrong direction, or am I still going the right way, right? And so so that's what I mean by yes and no. Like know truly what you want, who you want to serve, and also you have to dedicate time to serve for yourself as well. And stick to that. It's okay for your identity to change. My identity changed multiple times, right? And I was able to pivot through it. But the biggest lesson that I see a lot of, or the biggest, I guess, pain points for me when I look at social media and people who are putting themselves out there is negativity. Remember that if you're posting something, your great, 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 great grandchildren will see that post because it's indexed forever in the digital media space, right? So you got to be proud of what you post. And everything that you put out in there, every word that you put on Instagram and Twitter and stuff like that, that is your digital equity. You're building equity upon yourself. And that equity is priceless because multiple future generations have direct access to the equity on demand. They probably don't even have to type anything in the future. Why? They don't have to do it right now. Just ask Alexa or Siri or something like that, right? And so we're coming to that age where we understand that there's a footprint and imprint of everything that we do. And just because we said we're going to do it last year doesn't mean we have to necessarily continue to do it this year. And that's my thing. Our entire practice identity changed a bit. Our website changed to match our identity. You know, instead of calling ourselves integrative medicine, we call ourselves collaborative medicines because we reach out to other doctors and specialists so much. We're like, we're really collaborating. It's not really integrative. We're just collaborating. And that's bringing better outcomes for the practice. And because we're open with that and we share with people those things, people are okay with it, you know. And that's sort of my one new thing I've picked up this year from a lot of social media docs.
So let's get real practical. So if we're talking to a trainee out there, someone's residency, fellowship, or maybe they're early in their career and they're thinking, okay, this guy's tapped into something. I want to be like that. I want to tap into something. I want to influence my patients. I want to be in a position to influence other physicians. I want to be a thought leader. I want to do more. I want to be better. I want to be stronger. You know, what are some habits that we should be cultivating if our goal is to reach that level at some point? What are some practical things that we can be doing on a regular basis right now that will push us towards success in the future?
All right. So this is my big secret. I don't think I've ever talked about this before. There's nobody too big for me to talk to or attempt to ask to learn lessons. You know, I had several heroes years back. You know, Mark Hyman. He's a very famous, famous doctor. He's the doctor for the Clinton family and all the stuff like that. But you know what? I went to a conference. I met him, and the dude actually sat down with me because, I don't know why. I just went up and talked to him and was really honest about, hey, I like you, but you have pain points come out of here. I really want to know what they are. And they're not used to asking that. And then also, like, if nothing's what it seems, the people who are the most successful have come from a lot of strife. And you want to learn what those are more than you want to learn about the successes. And it's really easy to look at successes because they're clickbait. Right. It's sexy. But you really want to learn from the people who they are. So when I started going through training through functional medicine, integrative health, I reached out to Dr. Jeffrey Blend, who coined the term functional medicine in 1989. And then he's now a great mentor friend of mine. We're actually on boards of several different companies and being consultants on the business side. And so, like, there's no one too big for me to just, like, go out and talk to because everyone's human. And I was relentless in trying to communicate with these people because I really want to learn and absorb. And so I think that if you're a young doc or if you're any doc and you want to be an influencer, know what mistakes other people have made and just reach out to them directly. tweet them, Instagram, try to get their emails. And by the way, it is really easy, no lie, to get someone's cell phone number and email these days. I have my ways, but it's actually really, really easy, and it's scarily easy. But I ended up being real resourceful and putting myself out there. And then my emails have you know, what Tony Robbins called RPM format. R is, what is the end result I'm trying to achieve? So I am trying to learn from your mistakes, because I like the things that you're doing, but I recognize that it took a lot to get here, right? P, what is the purpose behind it? Because this drives me. It feels like I feel like I have a lot of contribution, and I really want to learn from you. And then M is, he calls it the massive action plan, or the map. Like, I would like a map to get to where you are right now. Would you be willing to guide me? Got to use the word guide. Would you be willing to guide me? So that's how I kind of write all my emails and my voicemails, stuff like that. That one secret, I think, has put me in places I never thought I'd be, like the White House. Like, that was brand new this year, after COVID-19. And so, and now, you know, I'm being asked to do things that I can't even talk about in here because the government won't let me, you know, stuff like that. It's really cool stuff that's really going to be affecting the health, the scene of what healthcare reimbursement is going to be. And, you know, that's really over the last 4 years. You know, I just turned 38, and I look back and I'm really proud of what I accomplished. And I don't know how I got here as fast as I did, but what I do know is that I was uncompromising in being genuine to myself, and genuine to other people. And there's nothing fake about what I do. And if I change my mind, I'll tell people I changed my mind, and for whatever reason, and I'm emotional about it, you know? And so I think those are, you know, be who you are, like, genuinely inside. Don't be who someone else wants you to be.
So I love the strategy of talking to people, not about their successes, but specifically about their failures. And This is a really practical way to leverage a concept that I've long been a fan of, the idea that the best mistakes to learn from are the ones that you see somebody else make, right? Yeah. So people say the best mistakes to learn from are your own. And those may be the most powerful to learn from, but I'd much rather learn from somebody else's mistakes. So that takes a lot of gumption to just email someone out of the blue and, or call them out of the blue and say, hey, listen, I've been following you. I'm an admirer of your work, of your character. I want to do the kinds of things that you're doing. Will you guide me? And you're going to probably get a lot of no's. I would expect that you've had a lot of no's or a lot of no responses.
Surprisingly not.
So really,
you know, I think
that is kind of surprising, actually.
You know, I'll tell you what, you know, and I think, you know, I reached out to you cold call too, actually. I think that when you talk about your true genuine self and what you're trying to portray out there, it's even reverberated into an energy of an email, you know. But, you know, have there been no's? Sure, there have been no's. But no's are never no's. They're always not now's. My biggest yeses were always not now's for the first like 2 years. And all of a sudden I get a phone call or a text like, whoa, like this person wants to talk to me. This is kind of cool. I mean, that's how I got into this sort of federal task force. I hadn't talked to this person in 2 years. And now they want me to write something for CMS. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And so you never know, because, you know, people may not remember who you are, but they'll remember how you make them feel, right? And if you're really honest and forth about yourself, and you're right, it does take some gumption there. But I am not ashamed of it, because I am projecting myself, you know. And have there been really embarrassing emails that I shouldn't have sent a few years ago? Sure. But I'll say, hey, you know, I sent you 3 years ago that email. You know, I'm a little different now, you know, but I'm very forthcoming about it. And guess what? 2022, 2023, I'll probably be different again. But, well, I'll keep telling you about it. Never going to hide that.
Oh, no, I love that. I think that's really, really fantastic. So as we're starting to think about how we can grow, how we can mold ourselves, how we can start to seek out some of these mistakes to learn from, these successes to emulate, how do we incorporate that into our into our strategic vision for our lives without burning out? Because I could easily see how you have this grand vision for yourself and then you say, okay, I need to work 10 times as hard as everyone else. I need to do all these different things. I need to be sending emails. I need to be calling people. I need to be growing in these ways. I need to be influencing people. I need to be on social media. I need to be talking to patients. And it very quickly balloons into this huge, overwhelming monster, right? And that just sort of consumes you. So how do we start to do that without becoming so overwhelmed that we just burn out and then we lose our momentum?
Oh, you know, I'm a recovering micromanager. wanted to do everything myself in the beginning because I thought I was the only one to do it. But that just ends in tragedy. You know, I think the most important thing to do is to understand the power of delegation. But by doing that, you kind of have to track what you're doing on a daily basis and see how much time you're actually wasting. And, you know, the second thing is you got to talk to the people around you, man. If you live with your family members, talk to them. You live with your spouse, talk to them. Talk to your kids if they're old enough to talk. And you'd be surprised at how much feedback you actually get. The people who you surround yourself with know you better than yourself, and you have to respect that, you know. And you can't be afraid to say, hey, how'd you think I did in the last week? Do I seem stressed? You know, what am I doing? And then, you know, my wife will always be very honest with me. It's like, Chang, stop it. you know, and I'm like, okay, I got it. I'll tone it down a little bit. But sometimes you'd be surprised and she'd be like, no, you're not working hard enough on this. Like, why did you just stop? I was like, oh, I got totally distracted, you know? So I think having that humility, this is a learned thing. This is not something that just came out of nowhere, but having the humility to talk to the people around you and recognize this, there's actually people that care about you, love you and accept that love. It's really hard for doctors to accept love, by the way, because there's a lot of PTSD coming from training, right? And recognize that love is the most important lesson that I have, because without, you know, my family's love, my friends' love, I don't know how to really appreciate myself the way I do right now, you know? And these are really hard lessons to learn, but business is 80% psychology, you know? It's about human interactions, about how to speak to people, how people speak, what personality they speak, not be offended, and always understanding what is the outcome they're trying to achieve. So I'll give you an example. My wife's an OBGYN. We're very different people. So we did this something called a DIS profile. I love the DIS profile. So D is dominant. I is influential. S is sort of a slow and steady personality, and C is very conscientious, and everyone has a mixture. So I'm a high I, which means I'm influential, but I tend to be very big picture and lose the details. My wife is the opposite of that. She's an SC, where she's kind of like slow and steady. And these are surgeons, like they're steady, they're very procedure oriented, and she can remember everything in a line, but she has a problem doing multiple tasks at a time. And I have a problem doing one task. I'll start 17 and finish one maybe, right? And so we have to understand that we're different in those ways. We're different leaders with different people in relationship. And the way we speak is actually very different. And so by recognizing who we are, by communicating who we are, it's not just about what they say, it's about how they say it. So if my wife is speaking to me and she's an SC personality, and she'd be talking to me, it's like, hey, why is there a sock on the floor, right? And so in my mind, I'm like, well, probably because I put it there because I didn't see the laundry basket here. So I didn't know where it was and I got distracted. I couldn't look for it. Right. Whereas if I see a sock on the floor, I'm like, hey, did someone misplace the laundry basket? You know, so it's different types of communication based on personality levels. I use that with my staff. I use that with patients. We disprofile all our patients all the time. You know, sometimes we'll, instead of saying Mrs. Smith or so-and-so, we're like, oh, she's the 67-year-old lady who's a DSC. I was like, oh, yeah, DSC. Oh, yeah, totally get it. This is why she sent us that secure message. Well, let's respond back in her DSC way, what she values. If someone's coming in with a notebook and paper in your office and writing down every single line item, they're probably an SC. If someone's just laying back right here and doesn't want to doesn't care what you're saying. As I just want the big picture, tell me what to do. They're probably a high D or a high I, right? And so I use that with business. I use that with family. I use that with the relationships, everyone around me. And it helps me be a better communicator, but understand people. And I honestly think that everyone always has the best intentions for what they know. And so we just have to meet them there.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. The DISC assessment is a really great tool. I got introduced to that about 4 years ago when I was developing the financial discipleship ministry at my church. Somebody had done it, and we went through it. It was hugely valuable. It really helps people learn how to communicate more effectively because you understand another person's communication style a lot better. So I'm a high I, high S. And my wife is a high C. So, yeah. So learning, understanding that those differences about ourselves was certainly very helpful.
I can predict your dinner side conversations now, not knowing your letters.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll I'll include a link in the podcast description for the DISC assessment if anybody wants to check it out. It is an incredibly, incredibly valuable tool. So I highly encourage people to go check that out. There's a lot of great tools like that, but I think the DISC is one of the best. Well, as we start to wrap up here, I want to take some of these concepts that we have discussed here, the idea of looking forward to failure, the idea of failing forward, the idea of keeping our core mission steady despite growth, despite non-growth, no matter what, sticking to those fundamentals. Let's take some of those concepts, and I want to talk about the future of medicine for private practice. What is that going to look like in the 2020s and the 2030s and beyond? What does the future of medicine need to be for private practice to be a scalable, workable model going forward?
Yeah, the operative word is scalable and workable, right? And that's always the thing that becomes really complicated, because if you think about it, the business of medicine is not designed to be scalable from a private practice point of view. Because what happens when the doctor retires? Well, the doctor is the business. It's really hard to kind of sell the business. What you're doing is selling the assets of the business, like a list of patients and the rights to see those patients, stuff like that, which is not worth very much at all. Versus if you are in real estate investment, all you're doing is building equity. And by the end of your life, you have a lot of equity, no matter how small you start from, right? And so so it's very difficult to scale medical practices unless you have consistency. Let's talk about the biggest inconsistency in all private practices is staff turnover. Whenever there's staff turnover, everything goes to crap. You know, and statistically speaking, your staff is most likely to quit when you're on vacation, statistically speaking, because they do not want confrontation, right, when the boss is away. And so that means you end your vacation early and stuff like that, and it's just not fun. So to have something that is scalable, you have to set up a structure where it is. The old days, which I think guess is the current days of a doctor, medical assistants, a office manager, and a billing person, is going to be defunct, okay? Because it's too high of a cost. Because we're dealing with a lot of documentation, which wastes a lot of time, and our dollars per hour is going to be a lot less dealing with this going forward. What is scalable are things like outsourcing things that are biggest pain points that someone can do that could be optimized for. So we use digital assistants. We have people who are trained very well in different parts of the country, different parts of the world, and who really jive with us in what we do. We use this platform. It's basically an online training manual called Trainual, actually. That houses all our SOPs, our procedures, standard operating protocols, that is able to let us train staff really, really fast, like digitally speaking, give them assessments and tests, and this does not take very long to make. And my senior staff actually makes it for these platforms, so that everyone comes in, it's consistently trained. And when someone is consistently missing something, I'm like, well, where did we go wrong in that training manual? Like, oh, it's right here. Let's just put this here. We put this here. All the new staff trained are well. That's scalable. That in business, that is very scalable when you have the SOPs down. And then you have to understand that humans are humans and humans are never going to be 100% error free, but there are automations and systems and artificial intelligence now that's available to doctors that can help you scale dramatically faster because of the consistency. And by the way, robots work 24/7. There's no off time for robots. So you can use robots for intake forms. I mean, a patient should be able to go to your website at 3 a.m. and schedule an appointment and give their insurance card and ID, and then all of a sudden end up on your calendar before your MA goes to work at 7:30 a.m, right? For the confirmation. All that could be done ahead of time. And then insurance pre-verification, that could be done ahead of time. There's so many tools that are available to docs now that's able to help scale. And guess what? Administrative burdens, that's the number one reason why docs are burnt out, statistically speaking, right? And so, you know, that's why I developed the Physician Practice AI Upgrade Summit to address these things. Like, there's so many companies out there that have systems for larger hospital systems. And now we're seeing startup companies and companies that have been in existence for 3 to 4 years that's dedicating themselves to the small to medium sized practices, which is what we are. And scaling from there using that technology is just going to be absolutely crucial. And that's where medicine really has to go. And the last thing is, really want to give a shout out there to health coaches. If you've never heard of health coaches, well, guess what? February 1st, 2021, the government just recognized health coaches. They have their own taxonomy number. We just adopted their taxonomy, which means we're now multi-specialty with family medicine, internal medicine, and health coaches. And these health coaches are actually considered providers because they have their own MPI numbers now, which means there's a billable platform for them. So part of my project on the federal level is to create and advise for fee schedules for what their reimbursements are. And so that was a big win for our group with these health coaches. So the medicine part, the core medicine part, will always be led by the physician. Always, 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 always. But there's things that can be engineered to overcome a lot of the pain points with administration, with communication, with intake, and with marketing. And I think it's just a really powerful thing.
So Dr. Juan, this has been fantastic. Thanks for coming on. Listen, I would love it if you would tell us a little bit more about this Physician Practice Automation Summit that you alluded to a little bit earlier.
Yeah, this summit is really geared towards physicians who really want to make the change for things to be more automated. It's for physicians who are burnt out, who really want to have personal development, relationship development, money development, and do all the things that reduce anxiety, improve the outcomes of our patients, and also adopting new and upcoming technologies. So we're featuring artificial intelligence companies and other Silicon Valley companies that have really changed the way that we do business. And it is something that I'm very proud of. And we have some big, big names on there that I'm really excited to feature. So I think everyone should really jump on to the summit. Thank you.
Yeah. And it's going to be free, right? So anybody can sign up to be on it and listen and watch the replays. So, I mean, there's no excuses here. I mean, it's going to be awesome. I know I'm giving 3 presentations. You got some 30 speakers and change that are going to be coming. I mean, it's just going to be an awesome time. Definitely wanted people to be a part of that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much to Dr. Cheng Juan for coming on the Scope of Practice podcast today. So make sure you go sign up for the summit. We'll have the links in the podcast description and in the show notes for everybody. And we'll say thanks again to Dr. Juan for coming on the show today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me on. I really had a good time. Thank you.
You know something? Dr. Juan isn't that much different from you or me. I mean, he started out with no knowledge of how to build and grow a major practice or how to build a large social media following, and yet he has grown and learned what he needed to know over time to build something incredible. And there's no reason why you can't do the same. Listen, you don't need 600,000 followers like he has to be able to be successful. You just need the diligence and persistence to get a little more knowledgeable and take a little more risk every day, and you'll grow over time. Hey, listen, if you're serious about building a successful physician practice, then you need to invest your time and energy into the right resources to help you grow. But you don't have unlimited time to read every book and take every leadership course and watch every video, especially since a lot of those things are kind of a waste of your limited time. And that's why I wanted to reach out today and give you today's free resource, the 5 critical tools all physician leaders need. This guide will help you cut through the noise and give you the 5 most impactful resources that you need to succeed in private practice. As a bonus for downloading the guide, you'll also get a free ticket to the new 2021 Physician Practice Automation Summit happening from October 17th through 24th of this year. The virtual summit is hosted by none other than our guest today, Dr. Ron. He has brought together over 40 experts in medicine, AI, automation, marketing, accounting, the law, and more to help you grow, scale, and optimize your private practice in 2022. I can't wait to share this guide and the summit with you to help you discover the incredible power of AI and automation to build a thriving practice you're deeply proud of. So download the free guide and sign up for the summit at www.thescopeofpractice.com/AI summit. Also, don't forget you can sign up for free for the Marriage and Money MD Summit on November 15th through 17th at www.marriageandmoneymd.com. Don't miss out on either of these 2 amazing summits. They are both free and they are full of amazing speakers and phenomenal content. Best of all, they're both free. Sign up today by clicking the links in the podcast description. Thanks so much for joining me on the Scope of Practice podcast today. You can also find all those resources in the show notes at www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode79. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/episode79, or just click the links in the podcast description. Thanks so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Scope of Practice podcast at www.thescopeofpractice.com.
Before we end, here's a quick reminder. If you want to streamline your 5-star patient review generation, contact Empath IQ at www.thescopeofpractice.com/empathIQ. That's www.thescopeofpractice.com/EMPATHIQ, and mention the Scope of Practice podcast to receive 2 months for free.